You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining a podcast right now, giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. You know I'm coming with the good, hot topics, man. Can't wait to talk about the stuff we got going on in the sports world. But first, man, just wanted to say I hope everybody's been having a great week. This weather's been a little wild down here in the A. Been pretty cloudy outside. Then we get the rain, and then the sun comes out, then it gets humid. So shaping up to be a hot summer. But I'll tell y'all this, man. I got some summer fits on the way. Can't wait for them to get delivered, man. I went crazy this past week. I think I ordered like 8 outfits, man. I'm just excited to be able to put on some clothes and be able to go out this summer and feel safer than what we did last year. Now with vaccinations and everything circulating and going on around the world, we are shaping up to be in a way better position than we were last year. I ordered some new glasses, so I got some new glasses on the way. Hey man, I'm set, and I hope y'all ready just like I am, man. So buckle up, get ready. And on top of that, next week, we got Juneteenth coming up next Saturday. Excited about that. Can't wait to celebrate that day, which is now recognized as a national holiday. So, yes, man, a lot of great things going on right now. But, hey, let's jump into things right now. Let's get into these sports. First up, man, let's talk Julio Jones, man. So Julio Jones has been officially traded to the Tennessee Titans. Yes, Julio Jones has been shipped off to the Tennessee Titans. Now, the Falcons traded Julio and a 2023 6th-round pick to the Titans, and the Titans will send a 2022 2nd-round pick and a 2023 4th-round pick to the Atlanta Falcons. Now, the Titans general manager, John Robinson, said that he's excited to add Julio to the football team. He's excited to be part of what we've got going on in Nashville. It's a big day for our team. So that's coming from the general manager. Now, trade talks actually sparked between the Falcons and the Titans and picked up last Saturday before they eventually agreed to terms on this past Sunday. So general manager Robinson also said that they started to evaluate Julio's fit with the Titans as soon as they knew that he was going to be available. So as soon as they heard that the Falcons were thinking about shopping him around, and when we all know that that was going around dating back to the draft time. And it was reported that Julio had already asked to be traded. And then their general manager came out and said, hey, we're looking to entertain calls about Julio Jones. So that's when that stuff really just started to spark around the league and get everyone's attention. Now, Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown actually had started to recruit Julio to the Titans via social media when these trade rumors first surfaced. So I know A.J. Brown was on TikTok. Derrick Henry was on Twitter. They both were really on Twitter as well, just really making their case for Julio Jones to come join the Tennessee Titans. And now the Titans did lose their top pass catchers from last year, and that being wide receiver Corey Davis and tight end Jonnu Smith. They lost both of those players to the New England Patriots, but they get a huge boost with Julio Jones on their roster now. The Titans' odds to win the Super Bowl at Caesars Sportsbook actually improved from 35-1 to 30-1. And their odds to win the AFC improved from 18-1 to 15-1. And their odds to win the AFC South, improved from plus 120 to plus 110, making them tied with the Indianapolis Colts to win the division. General Manager Robinson said that Julio is a big, fast, and tough, and he's great with the ball in his hands, and he checks all the boxes. Now, Julio Jones's base salary of $15.3 million is fully guaranteed this season. So the big question here is this, you know, can Julio and A.J. Brown be the best wide receiver duo in the NFL? So let's take a look at both of these wide receivers real quick, and then I'll tell you how I feel about it. So let's look at Julio Jones. So 32 years old, and he's entering this next season. Now, over the past 10 seasons, Julio Jones leads the NFL with 58 100-yard receiving games. Now, the Titans as a team has had 50 100-yard receiving games in that span. That's just as a team. The Falcons' career leader in catches is Julio Jones with 848 and yards with 12,896. That's second to Roddy White in touchdowns as well with 63. He has a 95.5 receiving yards average per game, which is the best in per game average in NFL history. And that's almost 10 yards better than Hall of Fame wide receiver, first ballot Hall of Fame wide receiver Calvin Johnson, with 86.1. Now, Julio had one of his worst seasons last year in 2020, where he only played 9 games due to a hamstring injury. However, his 15.1 yards per catch was his highest since 2017, and 75% catch percentage was the best of his career. So despite missing all that time, he still was able to put up some career numbers, you know, in which is a positive sign, even especially being able to miss time. And we all know he had the lingering hamstring injury that really just held him back. So that's Julio. So let's look at A.J. Brown. So A.J. Brown's 23 years old. Last year, he had 1,075 receiving yards, which was 16th among wide receivers in the NFL. And he had 11 touchdowns, which is tied for fifth in the NFL. So he's entering, and that was just in his second year. So he's going into year three, could really be a breakout year for A.J. Brown with Julio Jones on his other side. Now, A.J. Brown is big, strong, physical, and he's a fast wide receiver, and he's a really good route runner, and he shows his toughness each and every game. So my answer to this question is yes. I do think that these two, they have the capability to be the best wide receiver duo in the NFL. Yes, they do. A lot of people are questioning Julio Jones' decision to go to the Titans and saying that he's obviously making a lateral move because of the situation with the defense is not any better than it was in Atlanta, which is very true. They do have a lot of issues on defense that they have to address going forward if they're going to want to be effective, you know, throughout this season, because we all know that if you don't have a defense, man, you could put up 30, 40 points a game. But if you're giving up 30, 40 points a game, that's not really helping your case at all. So they do have to make some improvements on the defensive end. But I do think that from an offensive standpoint, you look at this situation here, Ryan Tannehill, a lot of people give Ryan Tannehill, you know, a lot of negative, you know, negative feedback. But Ryan Tannehill is a guy that can throw the deep ball. You know, he's not the flashiest guy, but he can get the ball down the field. And that's something that Julio Jones was really looking for when he was looking in the market. You know, he already mentioned in Atlanta, you know, he wants to go somewhere where he can win. I do believe that he can win in Tennessee. You know, obviously there was some issues with Matt Ryan being able to get connected with Julio with the deep ball. You know, I know a lot of the bulk of his completions were, you know, they were tight coverage and very tight windows. Julio had to lay out a lot for some passes. He took a lot of big shots. You know, he caught most of his passes in traffic and really created after that, you know, with yards after catch. But with Ryan Tannehill, I think with a younger guy in Ryan Tannehill who can sling the ball down the field, he does create an opportunity for Julio Jones to get some one-on-one matchups. Now, teams will no longer be able to load up the box for Derrick Henry, so you got to respect Derrick Henry. You got to respect. Now that's going to be the crazy thing is, how are you going to account for Derrick Henry, account for A.J. Brown, and account for Julio Jones all at the same time? So defenses are going to have to be honest and be on their A game if they're going to want to have some success against stopping these guys. Now, like I said, they're not going to be able to load up that box. Julio and A.J. Brown, I think, will have a lot of opportunities to take advantage of one-on-one matchups down the field. So you look at situations where you're play action to Derrick Henry, and then you could go either way with Julio, you go with AJ Brown, you know, both guys that could get open. Now their success is going to be contingent upon obviously Julio Jones's health. Julio's going to have to be healthy and available for this to really work. And now I don't know if anybody saw the highlights of him at practice at OTAs already with the team, but Julio looks rejuvenated. He looks energized. He looks like he's ready to make a statement. And he already came out and said, you know, people say that he's 32 years old, which is older in the NFL, but he's still young. You know, he obviously has the utmost confidence in himself about his abilities and what he's capable of doing, and he believes that he obviously is still a guy that can do some things, can still make the Pro Bowl, and obviously the Titans believe that too. I personally believe that Julio Jones has the capability to have a huge year. I know, like I said, he has had injury history, a long list of injuries over his career, but I still think that with Derrick Henry and AJ Brown on his other side, that kind of takes a pressure off too, because you could really distribute the ball. You could distribute it evenly. You know, it's not always going to be 20 straight passes to Julio Jones and really tiring him out the whole game. So I look at this situation and I see a Titans team that can really, they could really take off, and they could definitely win this division. I think the battle is hands down going to be between them and the Colts. So shaping up to be some really, really great battles between both of those teams. And I'm looking forward to seeing the matchup when they face off this season. So excited for that. Excited for Julio. Just happy that he's in a place where he's happy. And I'll say this to, you know, some of those Falcons, there's a lot of Falcons fans out there that are like, oh, you know, I'm cool with us moving on from Julio. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're not cool with that. You wanted Julio, okay? Anybody that sits up here and acts like they were over Julio Jones is lying to you. You know, they are lying. Nobody in Atlanta genuinely wanted Julio to be gone, you know? But the fact of the matter is, like I've already mentioned last week, you know, they're in a situation where they were going to be taking a huge cap hit with Julio Jones's contract. And there was nothing they could do with restructuring it that would have made it more simpler for them to sign the rookies that they currently have unsigned. So they had to make a move. This was about creating cap space, and they unfortunately had to be with Julio. But hey, like I said, man. He's in a better place right now where he's happy and where he feels like he can win. And shout out to that Alabama connection. You know what I'm saying? You get Henry, Julio. That's that Bama 1-2 punch right there. You know, you can't be mad at that. That's Roll Tide all day. Y'all know I had to say it. Come on now. You already know I had to say it. But like I said, man, it's going to be an exciting season. I wish, and I'll say this and before I move on, I really, really wish that the Titans and the Falcons were actually playing each other this year, because I would have to be at that game, man. I don't care if it was in Nashville or Atlanta. but hey, moving on, man, let's talk NBA. So the Brooklyn Nets have been dominating the Milwaukee Bucks the first two games of this series. Went up 2-0 on the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Bucks were in a must-win game in Game 3 at home, and were able to get the victory 86-83 in a must-win game. Now, the question surrounding Brooklyn right now, do they need James Harden to be able to win this series? And let me just finish recapping Game 3, and I'll give you my answer. So, like I said, the Bucks won 86-83, must-win game. Series is now 2-1. The Bucks actually blew a big lead in this game. They were actually up 30-9 at one point early on in this game. So, largest lead was 21. That was the 21-point lead right there. They did lose that. Obviously, in the NBA, that's a whole lot of time. But they did start off, came out the gate swinging, built up this large lead, and ultimately did lose it. And we're down at one point later on in the fourth quarter. Now, Giannis put up 33 points, 14 rebounds, and he really imposed his will and dominated in the paint. He really showed just aggression, man. He really attacked. I mean, he was slamming the basketball emphatically, like with authority. He really got after it and attacked in that game, in game three. I mean, he showed how dominant he could be on the inside. However, he was 1 of 8 from the 3-point line. Why does he keep shooting? I have no clue. Like, I don't know what this thing is with Giannis shooting these fall away jumpers, pulling up from the 3-point line in transition. Like, I don't understand why he continues to do it. It's like he saw one or two go in over the past couple of games, and now he feels like he's a 3-point shooter. Like, Giannis, stop, bro. You're not a 3-point shooter, okay? Like, I guarantee you the Nets will let you have a 3-point shot all day, all game. They will step back and let Giannis shoot threes if that's what he wants to do. If he's not going to take advantage of his size and attack and create those opportunities that he did in game three, they'll continue to let him shoot. He's just wasting possessions. You're not a shooter. You're not a jump shooter. You're not a 3-point shooter. Like, no, stop. I don't get it. Anyway, Chris Middleton followed that up, 35 points and 15 rebounds. Now, Drew Holiday actually had the go-ahead layup in the final seconds to secure the win. So he actually was matched up one-on-one with Bruce Brown. And I'll get to Bruce Brown in just 1 minute. Y'all just wait. I'll get to Bruce Brown in just 1 second. Like I said, he had the go-ahead layup. Bruce Brown was guarding him. He spun off of him. Pretty nice move for that layup. And Brooke Lopez came up big in his game. He had 6 blocks, which was huge. Now, the Bucks only shot 37% from the field and 19% from the 3-point line, which is probably all Giannis's shots. and they had 11 turnovers. So shooting 19% from three, that's not going to cut it. You know, I know they won the game, but yeah, that's not going to get it done against Brooklyn. Now let's look at what the Nets did. So KD had 30 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. However, he was 3 of 8 from the 3-point line. Kyrie, 22 points, but he only had 1 assist, and he was 2 of 8 from the 3-point line. Joe Harris, 1-11 from the field for 3 points. Bruce Brown, 16 points and 11 rebounds, had a very solid game. He balled out. Don't get me wrong. He was out there hustling. He did his thing out there on the court. However, he made a huge mistake by deciding to drive to the lane and be Superman instead of getting the ball in Kevin Durant's hands. Like, Kevin Durant has scored the last 7 straight points. Why not give him the ball? Bruce Brown, why not give him the ball? I understand you were feeling it, all of that. You ball, double-double, shout out to you. But when you're in a situation in the final seconds of a basketball game and the best player on the court does not touch the basketball, that's a problem. You do not need to be the one taking the last shot. Not last shot, last layup, none of that. At least if you can't get it to Kevin Durant, get the ball to Kyrie and let him take the last shot. I don't know what Bruce Brown was doing, but he was feeling himself a little bit too much. A little bit too much. Now, on top of that, I think Steve Nash needs to do a better job. He should have drawn up a better play to get Durant the ball, if not get it to Kyrie. Now, I know the ball kind of fumbled around and they were wrestling for it, and Kyrie got his hands on it, kicked it back to Bruce Brown. But at that point, pull it back, get it back in Kyrie's hands. Let him do something. Let him create. There was enough time on the clock where Kevin Durant could have come off. He could have ran off of a screen or something, got the ball, been in one-on-one coverage, something. Like, I just do not understand why he made that decision. But nevertheless, it happened. They're up 2-1 still. Now, question here. Like I said before, do the Nets need Harden to win this series? I don't think that they need James Harden to win this series. I know that the Bucks have life now. I know that they put on a show down there on their home court, up there, I should say, in Milwaukee, on their home court, which they should have done. You know, they had their home crowd, their fans there, and they protect their home court, you know, for the first game at least. I don't think they need him, but I do think it would be good to have him back. I do think that. I personally feel like Harden is well enough to play. But I think that seeing how the first two games went, I don't think the Nets are in a rush to put him back out there on the court, because they see what they're able to do with just Kyrie and KD on the court, you know, and they're getting contributions from their role players that have really helped them elevate and really ball and get these the first two wins in the series. So looking at it, they're kind of looking at it like, hey, you know, maybe we don't have to rush him back too quick. You know, let's just see what happens in game three. Let's just see if, you know, if we could get another one, you know, get game three. Then, hey, I still think they're probably going to hold him out for game four. If the Nets can lock up game four, I think Harden will return in game five in a closeout game at home. That's how I feel. I just think, and you may call me crazy for saying that Harden, they don't need Harden to win the series, but let's just face the facts, man. The Nets, they had a really bad shooting night, you know, they still were in the game. They were held to under 100 points. That won't happen again. This is a team that's averaging at least 113 points per game. That's not going to happen again. They're not going to get held to 86 points again. The Nets also shot 36% from the field and 25% from three. That's not going to happen again. This is a really good shooting basketball team. They just had they got into a bad slump in game three. It happens. The Nets are a better shooting team, and they have a deeper bench. So I do think that they are more than capable of beating this Bucks team, who just now in game three kind of figured out that they had a size advantage and decided to play like they had a size advantage. But I still think that the shooting of Kevin Durant, Kyrie, Joe Harris, you know, those guys, that's gonna improve versus what they did in game three. It'll get better in game four. Like I said, Kyrie struggled a little bit. KD struggled a little bit early. I don't expect that to happen. I expect them to come out swinging in game four, and I expect them to be on their A game. So moving on, and I'm picking them to win game four as well. So I think the Nets are going to go up 3-1, and they'll be in a closeout game at home to close this series out and advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm going to go ahead and say it right now. Let's get that out the way. Moving on, man, let's talk college football. So interesting thing, exciting news coming out of the college football world, people. If you didn't hear it already, you heard it here first on the Lace Up podcast right now. So the college football playoff committee is considering an expansion to 12 team playoff format. We might have something here, y'all. Question here is this good or bad for college football? So let's just run down how this is going to work, okay? So a subgroup of the College Football Playoff Management Committee actually proposed to change the current 14 playoff format to a 12 team playoff format on Thursday. Now, the 12 team playoff would include the six highest ranked conference champions, and then you have the six highest ranked teams per selection by the committee. The four highest ranked conference champions will get a first round bye, and the first round will be played at the higher seeds stadium. So you'll have, again, let's run over that again. So you have your six highest ranked conference champions. So they're in, and then you'll have those six are in, and you have the committee picking the next six. The top four, they get their first round bye. Everybody who has to play in the first round, the higher seeds in the first round will be able to, they're going to host home games for that first game. for them to advance to the second round. Now, the next step is for the 11-member management committee to review the recommendation at their upcoming meeting in Chicago on June 17th and 18th. Now, if the management committee endorses the 12-team proposal, it will forward a recommendation to the College Football Playoff Board of Managers, who will meet on June 22nd in Dallas to review and approve. So if they approve it, it'll be then on the June 22nd in Dallas. So June 17th through the 18th, dates to watch, and June 22nd, next date to watch. Now, the current agreement for the 14 format extends through 2025-2026 season. But if the 12-team expansion is approved, it could start as early as 2023. So that's something to pay attention to. So in the next couple of years, we could be seeing this 12-team playoff format. So even though everything was extended with the 14 through, like I said, 2025-2026, this could come as early as 2023, everybody. So pay attention to that. Watch that. Now, again, is this good or bad for college football? I think this is a good thing for college football. Why is this good for college football? Let's just state the obvious right now. So we all know that this is about the money for college football. Obviously, they want to build more revenue. Okay. Outside of that, conferences can no longer whine and cry about being left out. What do we hear every year from the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and some of these other smaller schools in these other conferences? We had a UCF at one point. I think TCU at one point was mad that they got left out. They're crying about being left out compared to other teams' resumes. They felt like they were deserving. Now that's out the window. Now the door is open for more teams to get involved, more teams to have an opportunity. Instead of us starting off the year, and if you're not Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, and everybody else, you know, and maybe another team from the SEC like a Georgia or after that, after the SEC, ACC, and maybe one team from the Big 12 or whatever, or whoever it may be, maybe it's a Oklahoma or whatever, or maybe it's a Big 10 team, you know, now there won't be conferences that can say like, oh, we were left out. Now the door is open. Now we get 12. We'll have 12. Now it's going to be similar to like the NFL. It's going to be pretty cool. You know, like I said, your first teams, they get that bye. It's kind of like that format. You get that NFL feel. The season's going to be longer, which is exciting for the fans, obviously. We get a longer season. who doesn't want more college football? I do. So exciting. We'll also see more competitive games on bigger stages, with star players playing at a high level. So we won't see, you know, Alabama, you know, of course I'm down for Alabama smacking anybody. If we running on anybody, that's cool with me, but we want to see a competitive game at some point, you know. We no longer will see Alabama beating Michigan State by 30 or beating Notre Dame by 30. You know, every year Notre Dame gets in and they get blown out anyway. We won't see that anymore. Now we get to see competitive teams, players playing at a high level, the stars in college football. We get an opportunity to see all of them in those top 12 teams compete on a big stage. And another thing, this could also help increase draft stock for a lot of players. So this opens the door. You know, outside of the let's just say there's a player that was struggling throughout the season. Let's say he started off and he was having a good first half of the season, and then he started to struggle having a in the latter half of the season. But he gets in the playoffs and he just elevates his game and he gets his team over the top, and they advance to the semifinal, and they advance to a national championship, and they win a national championship. What does that do for them? Let's just say it's a quarterback. You know, there's not a lot of quarterbacks being really mentioned this year in this upcoming draft. So that could increase the draft stock for a quarterback. It could also do it for any position, really. I'm just really using that as an example. But this creates opportunity for players to really, really elevate themselves and elevate their game. Now, while this will be a huge revenue boost for college football, I still think that player safety must be important, as always. We're talking about 12, 13-game season now, expanding to, 15, maybe 16 games for some schools. So they may want to implement something, you know, more maybe like a policy or something that could protect, you know, players more just in the event of injury, you know, during the season with the lengthier season. I don't know. You know, they may want to do something like that. Yeah, I think it's something that you should consider, because obviously that will be a topic of conversation with them playing, you know, more games. But from a fan standpoint, man, I'm elated. I'm excited about this. We've been hearing about it really since the second year. Really, I think this really kind of started the first. Well, really, nah, I would say like the second year. This is kind of when it really started to spark up about teams really getting mad that they were left out, you know. And it just kept going from there. Every year there was a conversation, you know. So I think that this is just a great opportunity, and I'm excited to see, you know, how it pans out and how it goes. And you know, people are saying, you know, this is going to make it tougher for Alabama. Yeah, you know, the road will be tougher, but that doesn't mean my boys won't prevail. It's still Roll Tide all day, every day, baby. You know how we do. You know we're coming ready to play. So it is what it is, man. Whether it's four teams or 12 teams, we always ready. But yeah, let's move on, man. Let's move on. Let's go back to the NBA now. So, are the Suns the team to beat in the West? My answer to this question, yes, absolutely, man. I know what the Jazz are doing right now. I know that they're whooping up on the Denver Nuggets. And I know that they're whooping up on the Clippers, excuse me. But I'm just looking at this Suns team, man. I'm just like, man, these dudes, they're dangerous. You know, they're dangerous. After getting past the Lakers, man, the Suns, they've just elevated their game to a higher level. Let's look at game one against the Nuggets, man. The Suns, they shot 54% from the field and blew the Nuggets out 122-105. They gave them a 17-point Nugget combo in game one. Chris Paul, man. CP3, 21 points, 11 assists in his game. DeAndre Ayton, 20 points, 10 rebounds. Devin Booker, man, 21 points. Mikal Bridges, 23 points. Jay Crowder, 14 points. Got great contributions from their whole starting five in this one. Suns also had 13 fast break points in this game, and they out-rebounded the Nuggets 44-41. Now let's look at game two. In game two, the Suns shot 47% from the field, 47% from three, and they out-rebounded the Nuggets 52-46 and blew them out for a second time in a row, 123-98. So they came with the 17 Nugget combo, and they say, you know what, that's not enough, man. We'll come and give y'all a 25-point Nugget combo with a medium fry and a large drink. When I tell y'all, I mean, they are beating. They had Jokic, the MVP, scratching his head. The Joker. The joke is on you. How are you going to respond? They're looking at Jokic like, MVP? We don't care about that. I mean, they had Jokic scratching his head in utter disbelief and confusion. They're running these boys off the gym, off the floor, out of the, running them out of the arena, embarrassing them. Chris Paul, game two, 17 points, 15 assists. He became the first player in NBA history to record 15-plus assists in a playoff game for three different teams, that being the Hornets, the Clippers, and now the Phoenix Suns. DeAndre Ayton, another double-double, 15 points, 10 rebounds. Book, 18 points, 10 rebounds. Bridges, 16 points. And the Suns had 46 points from their bench. Everybody on the Suns bench scored except two players. And then they had one player that did not play from a coach's decision. See, everybody that was active, out of everybody active on the bench, only two players did not score a point. Like, the Suns are, they're balling, man. You can't deny it. They're currently number one in the NBA in points allowed in the playoffs at 98.5 points. And they're number three in points differential in the playoffs. So they're plus 10 right now. The Suns, man, they're a very streaky team, and they're really peaking at the right time, man. I expect the Jazz Suns Western Conference Finals matchup, man, which is going to be shaping up to be a great Western Conference Finals matchup. I'm really, really excited about that, and can't wait to see what happens there. And you know, on the East, you know, I'm really looking at. You know, now the Sixers have made everything interesting. Now they've tied the series up with the Hawks. Joel Embiid is really balling, out of control right now, despite having that knee injury. You know, we got two good series going on in the East, but ultimately I'm pulling for the Hawks. You know, the hometown team here. I'm hoping the Hawks can you know, when they get here, playing in the next game, they can ball out and potentially have an opportunity here to go up 3-1 and really put some pressure on the Sixers. But it's going to be a tall task, you know, seeing how the Sixers have started to come alive. And this really started late in game one when they went on that rally. And it's really transitioning to game two. So we'll see how game three shapes up. And then I expect the Nets to, like I said already, to beat the Bucks. So could shape up to have a Nets-Hawks Eastern Conference Finals. Or, you know, like I said, if the Sixers, you know, turn it on. I'm rooting for the Hawks. But if the Sixers turn it on, man, we'll have a really exciting matchup with the Nets and the 76ers in the Eastern Conference Finals. So we'll pay attention to those matchups, man, because it's shaping up to be an exciting series is different series is coming going forward. And next up, man, let's talk about Aaron Rodgers, man. So the situation in Green Bay, man, it's beautiful, man. I love it. You know, I tell y'all this all the time. I'm a Chicago Bears fan. You know, I'm riding high right now. We got Justin Fields. We had a solid draft, two solid offensive tackles that we picked up. Got some wide receivers, picked up a running back, really coming back with a rejuvenated defense, healthy. Just an exciting time for a Chicago Bears fan, man. Aaron Rodgers, not present at OTAs, man. The Green Bay Packers, man, they thought this was a game. Aaron Rodgers, not present at organized team activities. Question here, man, will Jordan Love be QB1? You know, I think with the Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, their current situation, I think Jordan Love will end up being QB1 this year. Aaron Rodgers, like I said, he isn't present there, and he could be fined by the organization if they choose to do so. That could be the penalty for missing his time. Now, Aaron Rodgers has been reportedly upset with the GM, Brian Gutekunst, and he no longer wants to play for the team as long as he's there. So those rumors have surfaced. They said that, you know, Aaron Rodgers asked for him to fire him. They're saying all kind of different things. You know, Aaron Rodgers came on ESPN and did a little interview and said that, you know, the way that his stance right now, it's not about Jordan Love, and but it's about, you know, in the organization, sometimes organizations forget that the people that make the organization run, that make them tick, you know. So obviously he's felt for some time now disrespected, and he's not really interested in playing for the Green Bay Packers anymore. Now, despite efforts to rectify the situation with restructured contracts, they've offered him money. They've asked him different questions about what this is, but Rodgers has not budged in his stance. You know, now the former Packers wide receiver James Jones, who spent 8 seasons with Aaron Rodgers, he was seen on Colin Cowherd's show speaking on the situation. He said that he speaks with Aaron Rodgers all the time, and he said that this isn't about the GM or the money. So despite what everything that we've been hearing about it being about the general manager, James Jones is saying it is not about the general manager and it's not about the money. Now, Jones stated that the issue and Rodgers' number one beef is a private conversation that he can't share with anyone. So this is really, it's crazy, because whatever this is, we all need to know what it's about. You know, what is it that happened that bad that is keeping Aaron Rodgers at this point saying, you know what, I'm out, man. No matter what y'all do, no conversation is going to rectify this. What could it have possibly been? Because now, if it's not about the general manager, if it's not about Matt LaFleur, if it's not about Jordan Love, who could it be about? What is it about? You know, is this... I really just think maybe it's an accumulation of things that have happened over time. We never know what private conversations could have happened between Aaron Rodgers and his front office, man. Things that could have been said. Maybe Aaron Rodgers overheard some things. Maybe they were saying some things about Aaron Rodgers behind his back that got back to Aaron Rodgers. You know, maybe it's that type of situation where now the loyalty is in question, and he doesn't feel like he can trust them. You know, it could be so many different things, but I'm definitely interested to know what it could be. But I'm fully confident that no matter what happens in the next 6 weeks, because that's the time frame that the Packers have before training camp starts, I'm fully confident that no matter what they do, Rodgers will not be present in training camp. I think this bridge has been burned to the ground. It's to the point now, like I said, he's not even budging. He still hasn't budged since he made the, you know, since he came out and said that he doesn't want to play. He's even said that he retire. If they don't trade him, the Packers have said they're not going to trade Aaron Rodgers. So we're going to see what happens going forward. But I think, you know, Aaron Rodgers, if they don't trade him, he could sit out. You know, ultimately, I think there's a possibility that Aaron Rodgers could actually retire, sit out for a year, and then come out of retirement and play for another team. Nobody really talked about that yet, but you heard it here first on the Laced Up Podcast Show. Hey, man. Hey, what? Hey, I'm just saying, man. You heard it here first. I'm just speculating. What if that's in the plan? What if he retires, sits out, and comes back and says, hey, you know what? I'm going to sign with the Broncos. That's a move that could be made. It's possible. Something to think about. But right now, man, I think the Packers, they need to be all in on Jordan Love and getting him all the reps that he could get. That they have, you know, Davante Adams is there, and Lazard and Valdez-Scantling were there at OTAs, but which is good for Jordan Love and getting his confidence up. But I think that, you know, they are saying that he struggled at first, but he's starting to improve or whatever. But everything will tell its tale when the pads are on in preseason. But right now, the focus needs to be on Jordan Love, getting him prepared, getting him in the best possible position to be successful. They need to spend all the time with him that they can. He needs to be studying the playbook, watching film, and grasping every concept and schemes and everything that he can grasp, because I think that he's going to be the QB1 in week 1 for the Green Bay Packers. But hey, that's all I have for y'all, man. Again, I thank you for joining in, giving me some time to talk some sports with y'all, man. Love it each and every week, man. We can have a nice talk, man, and really, you know, throw some things out there about what can happen, man, in the sports world, because it's ever changing, man. Things are going crazy right now, but it's a great time to be a fan. And it's a great time to really just look at what's transpiring in the world of sports. So again, hey man, keep rocking with me. I got some new stuff coming up, man. Gonna start recording these podcast shows, man, so I can post it on my YouTube channel, and you guys can go subscribe. So just be on the lookout, man, for some different things that I have coming pretty soon. And I appreciate everybody, all the love and support as always, man. Peace and love. I'll be back next week. I'm out, man. Be blessed.